Welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio West, your show for all things kayak fishing in Oregon, Washington, California, and beyond. Now, here's your host, Isaac the Nothing Miller.
Hey folks, how's it going tonight? This is Isaac the Nothing Miller, and this is episode one of Kayak Fishing Radio West. This is it. Tonight's show, I'm hoping to talk mostly about salmon fishing, since that's the big thing right now. That's what we're all looking for. So I have a guest lined up for tonight. Still waiting for him to call in, and hopefully he'll do that here shortly. I was actually out myself today, got out for about 5 hours down onto the Willamette River, and didn't find a bite, couldn't buy one. The whole time I was there, I saw one fish caught. I saw one get to a boat, but the guy got it all tangled up in his net and lost it. Unfortunately, that's kind of the way things sometimes goes when you're salmon fishing out here. Big fish need big nets, and if you don't have one big enough, then you're going to lose the fish. Weather's been great through the weekend. I know fishing's been good, especially on the Willamette River. You know, prawn spinners are working excellently, and herring's been working well down towards the mouth where the water's still a bit cooler. That's the gist of it right now. If you're looking to do some catch and release sturgeon fishing, that's been doing pretty well lately also. You know, sturgeon is closed for retention, but you can still fish for them all you want, as long as you have a barbless hook and you let the fish go. If you want to do some sturgeon fishing, get yourself some herring. Since everyone's been using herring for salmon fishing, you know, they've been throwing over the leftover bits out of the heads from their cut plugs or the bodies when they're changing out baits, and you know, the sturgeons have quite the taste for that right now. Anyway, enough of that little stuff. Like I said, I'm Isaac the Nothing Miller, kayak angler here in the wonderful city of Portland, Oregon. I've been fishing from the kayak now. This is my third year on my kayak. But I won, let me back you up. I'm the 2009 Oregon Rockfish Classic winner. I've competed, last year I was 13th or tied for 13th or 12th. So just outside of the top 10 on the Oregon Rockfish Classic. Third place at the Dungeness Crab Tournament we had at Cape Disappointment, there at the mouth of the Columbia River. Went to Georgia with yakangler.com and as a team. And as a team, we may not have done so well, but we did score points, and I finished sixth or seventh. I think it was sixth place overall with a little bitty tiny striped bass that we picked up in some very ugly water. Let me see. Oh, here's our guest. Let me get into him. Michael, is that you?
Yeah, it is me. Hey. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Sorry.
How's it going, man?
Pretty good. I looked away from my computer screen and I didn't see a call in. Sorry about that.
Hey, everybody. No problem.
I've got Michael, otherwise known as Jammer. He is our local Hobie kayak pro. And you were last year in 2010, you won the Oregon Rockfish Classic, right?
I did. Yep. Yes, I did.
And you won the Cape Disappointment Crab Derby.
I did.
And you worked for that one, too. didn't you win another tournament last year?
No, I didn't win another tournament. I think we all were in the Angler of the Year tournament, which is hosted by our local kayaking board.
Right.
A year-long tournament. But, yeah, and that, I think I took eighth. I think I took eighth behind you. I think you
said.
What did you get last year on that?
I was fifth. So you were sick.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, so we were both top 10 on that one. So.
Yep. We got a couple free memberships to the Northwest Sportsman magazine, which is very, very cool. So anyway, hello everybody out there. Sorry I was late getting on board, but here I'm here to help answer any questions or anything.
Awesome. Well, you know, this is definitely salmon season right now. What do you got going on out there? I know last year you were slaying them on pretty much a nightly basis. How's things been so far this year?
You know, it's well, one thing that's been happening in our Oregon waters for the last couple of years here is we've had a really strong return run of spring Chinook salmon, especially into our local waterways, which are, of course, the Columbia River and the Willamette River, which is a tributary to the Columbia. Where Isaac and I live in Portland, we are actually more positioned, downtown Portland is more positioned on the Willamette River, which is the other stem that comes off. And there's a huge run of Chinook that come through into our local downtown waters and literally spawn way upstream. I don't know how, I think the Willamette may go as far as 80 or 100 miles. Actually, it flows to the north. So the river, the headwaters of the river are way south of Portland, and it flows north into the Columbia. But it's a huge run of Springer Chinooks. Last year we had a huge return of Springers. I think it was somewhere around 100,000 came over the dam in Oregon City. This year they were forecasting, the Oregon biologists were forecasting a return of another 100,000, or actually I think they said exactly 106,000 spring Chinook back over the falls, which is a huge return. I mean,
yeah, I mean that's huge. That's more than they've had over Bonneville so far this year.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
So,
I mean, that's the forecast for the year. But where we're at right now in the run so far, I think that I don't know the website. I know there's a website that you can get to. I think it's the USGS or somebody .gov. One of the hydrology websites has the actual counts. There's fish counters there, and they're counting the numbers. And to date, I think it's about 4,000 or 5,000. Now, keep in mind, they're forecasted to be 106,000. So, yeah, we're not even to 10% of the run so far, or 5%. We're not even to 5% of the run so far. So, we have a long way to go. And this thing, same thing happened last year. So, whatever the fish biologists are doing, or what they did 4 or 5 or 3 years ago is right on the money, because we're having really big returns.
Right. Hey, Michael, I got another guest on the line here. Let me pick this up and see if I can get him going. There we go. Hey, you're on the air with Isaac the Nothing Miller, Kayak Fishing Radio West. Who we got?
Hey, Isaac, it's Chip, man. How are you?
Hey, Chip, how's it going?
Good, man. Thought I'd drop in and see how it was going. First night of the West Coast slot here.
Thanks. Michael, this is Chip. Chip is the founder of Kayak Fishing Radio, and he's been running his show. How long have you been running? Since September of last year?
Yeah, we kicked it off about September last year, late summer, and we've been doing the Thursday night show, but glad to have you on board, man.
Hey, glad to be here.
There's a lot going on the West. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say there's a lot going on the West Coast. So, Isaac, whatever's going on or what you're kicking off here, I'm sure it's going to be successful because, you know, there's a lot going on.
That there is. So we actually had there's another show hosted by Rob DeVore, a bad can never say his name. A Bad Backcast. He's out of Florida, and he did a late night show on Thursday nights that we did a lot of West Coast stuff on. We had Dennis Spike out of California, kayakfishing.com. I don't know if you're familiar with him or his website. But they, you know, we got on the air a couple of times and had a lot of fun talking about West Coast fishing. So it was just, I think it was kind of time to make it more permanent.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There's a lot going on out here on the West. I mean, obviously, we have a huge coastline and, you know, there's from Baja to Canada, there's, I mean, we're right in the heart of it up here in the Pacific Northwest. So I'm sure that there'll be a lot of good reports of big fish and hopefully, you know, some good reports online here with you guys. So,
yeah. So, Michael, how's the fishing been lately? I know we got a lot of fish that are supposed to be coming. But you seem to be doing all right. What's the scoop?
I've done very, very well. I'm drinking water. I'm trying to kind of get my bearings here. I just got home from fishing right now in my kayak on the Willamette River. I've been out with a couple other guys from our local Northwest Kayak Angler board here that we're all members of. But anyway, we're all in kayaks. It was kind of a slow night tonight. It was kind of the bite was off tonight, but it's definitely been on lately, last couple weeks. The entire run this year is I don't know, as far as I'm guessing, could be as much as a month late. We had a really wet and cool spring.
Because I remember last year we were pretty much done fishing by this time.
Yeah. You're exactly right. Early May, it was pretty much shutting off at this point. And right now, like I said, with those numbers, we're 5% of the quota. There's a lot of fish coming. So it's off to a very, very good start. For me personally, in the last two weeks, I've brought in five hatchery fish. And I've released two wild fish, so I've had a total of seven fish just in the last 2 weeks. When I go out, I go at small spurts at a time, and so it's very condensed my time on the river, but there's a lot of really good areas that I've been able to dial in a little bit that are very productive, so I can get right on them. What's killing them right now for us locally are prawn spinners. We're using a red prawn and a spinner blade in front of that.
You just posted up a good how-to article over on Northwest Kayak Anglers on how to rig up those prawn spinners, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I think they saw that I was having a little bit of success recently using this technique, and of course, you know, for kayak anglers, I want to see more of us on the river doing what the power boaters are doing. So it's not a secret. It's just all I know. I mean, I found this stuff out just by asking the old guys in power boats sitting there motoring next to me on the river, just talking smack with those guys. That's how I learned all my techniques. And it's only been in the last 3 years that I've learned this. So it's just a lot of it I've picked up. I've put it to the test and found that these techniques that I've got from these guys are actually working really well for me, all the way down to spinner blade colors and amount of lead I'm using. Our rivers right now are really cleared up, so the fish that are coming through our system are real reactive to what they can see. If it's blown out and it's hard to see and the river's full of mud, and the visibility goes down, they're not nearly as likely to hit visibly as they are right now when it's clear.
I was out there today myself. I was out there today myself, and I was noticing how much clearer the water is today compared to just like a week or two ago. I think at one point I was able to see, you know, a good 4 or 5 feet, which for the Willamette's speaking a lot, especially this time of year.
Now,
you know, between having, you know, really clear water like we do today versus, you know, murkier water like we had a week or two ago, what types of things are you doing to change up your presentations? What's your, is your bait changing at all?
You know, really all, so what I'm doing differently now as I was, you know, from what I was doing, you know, a couple weeks ago is, when the river gets muddy here locally here in Portland, the Chinook tend to hold the bank really close. And actually that's when a lot of these local fishermen that fish from the bank with spinners really have a ton of success, because these Chinook get way over against the sides. They want to get out of that current. They want to save their energy. I don't know if it's just part of their time clock or whatever, or their biological chemistry, but they want to get out and they want to conserve. So they get way up on the side. So that's when those guys really hammer them. It's really hard to fish them at that point, but I'm talking from a kayak or from a boat. But the guys that are catching them when the river kind of gets blown out are the people that can hug the banks. Now, us in kayaks, we have a lot less at stake with kayaks than some of these guys in these big boats with, you know, $6,000 motors. So, you know, we have a lot of benefits, and one of those is being able to get right next to the bank, whether it be just kind of holding your position and trolling some sort of a salmon spinner in, you know, 6 feet of water, or even back bouncing a prawn spinner or whatever it may be, or just holding your position and trolling a prawn spinner, it's going to be deadly in that higher water. Well, once we get to the clear water like we are right now, then we can move out off into the deeper water. The water slows down a lot. We can get down. We can get our presentations. They can see it. And so basically what we're doing is getting our bait and our presentation down there. Most of the fishing I'm doing right now is in I'd say, averaging in about 18 to 20 feet of water.
That's what I was going to ask you. Okay.
Yeah. It's targeting these fish that are just kind of coming up out of the channel. They don't want to be in that channel down deep where the sturgeon are. They want to be up in the path of least resistance, as far as I know. I don't know this
but
for a fact. This
even
is
if
kind
they're
of
not,
what I'm learning about.
Yeah, even if they're not afraid of the sturgeon in the deep channel, they're definitely afraid of the sea lions that I saw hanging out there today.
Oh yeah. Big time. Yeah, that's a whole other episode.
That it is.
But it's the bite is turning on right now for sure. We've got a long way to go, and like I said, we're a month behind in this season, but you know, here's the one thing we have, our one issue at this point, is because we have had such a huge winter. We have so much snow still waiting to come down. We are way behind the eight ball on our snowpack melting. So if and when this our local weather heats up, we could really lose the bite again to a blown out river due to just snow melt alone, which would suck.
That's a really good point. You know, I forgot. You know, there's still snowing up in the mountains. You know, just the other day there was fresh snow up there. And that's, you know, when things do warm up, that's going to drop the water temperatures. That's going to bring the water temps back down.
You're exactly right.
Plus bring the water levels back up. And right now I think the water levels are still high.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Compared
to what I've seen before, you know, there's rocks that I know I should be seeing, and they're not.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, and even as dry as it's been, the water levels are only going to increase, you know, because the snow's got nowhere to go but melt at this point. The sun is hot when it's out. It's, you know what I mean? That stuff's got to come down. And it's light late enough now here that, I don't know, That's going to be, I think, our big battle besides sea lions. is the runoff, you know, with all these fish coming through. Other than that, I think it's going to continue being a very, very good run. big fish. I caught my biggest fish, like I said, 39 1/4 inch spring Chinook. It was 22.5 pounds. That was last night. It hit like a freight train.
That's good. I wish I could have gone with you. How do things look for you today? Because I know I was down in that same general area today and couldn't find a fish. In fact, the 5 hours that I spent down there, I only saw two hooked up, one of which was lost at a boat, and the other one they did get in the net. But things were looking kind of slow. How are things looking tonight?
Pretty slow. Yeah, things were, kind of the same thing. I didn't see a lot of action. I know that a lot of fish came through the night before last, and even yesterday morning, I had a friend that was out in a kayak right there on the Willamette, and was out there from, I think, 6 to 7:30 is what he said. It was an hour and a half. And he caught a 35 and a 40-inch spring Chinook in 1.5 hours. So he caught his limit. That's the limit here in Oregon. It's two of those a day. You put them on your card, and he put them on his card. But it's just it's real. I mean, they really do come through in waves. And like you alluded to a few minutes ago, water temperature is absolutely crucial. One thing I've learned recently is we had a really strong bite about 2 weeks ago. All of a sudden, our water temperatures, if you look back at the numbers or through the online records you can access, you can see that it went up to 52 degrees. All of a sudden, we had that storm roll through, or a couple days of cold weather and rain, and it's when it blew out the river. But it also dropped the temperature of the river back down in the 49s, which we saw the bite turn off. We heard about it on the and on the news and all the local sporting, fishing shows and all that stuff. The bite turned off. And so I think there's some truth to to what you were starting to talk about, is that there really is. Once that river changes temperature and turbidity, it's a different ballgame. So, it's on one day, it's off the next.
That it is. And that's, really interesting to see what comes. Like I said, that when that snow starts to melt, that river's going to come up and it's going to get cold. And, generally, I know you're using prawn spinners right now, and that's traditionally considered a warm water or a warmer water technique. That's most people start doing the prawn spinners, around 54, 55 degrees. And once it gets below that, then people start going back to the herring. So I don't know if it's going to be something we got to keep track of. Every day you go out, do you bring out prawns and herring? Figure it out when you get down in the river or what's going to happen, So.
Yeah. That's, it's one of the, you look at a lot of the power boaters that are, they're not, they're doing that. If they got four rods in the water, they're trying different things on each rod. They've got probably a cut plug herring on one, and maybe they have, they've got a diver and a prawn on the next, and a salmon spinner and a diver on the next. Who knows what it is?
Yeah.
Or a quick fish, scented with sardine, or who knows?
Yeah, I know. I know. Today I tried the prawn spinners, and I broke out the super baits. The plug cut Mike Superbait, that one?
Yeah.
I brought that out today as well.
How did it work?
If you're in the Willamette and you're trolling upstream, which is what we do a lot on the Willamette, you gotta go a little bit faster than you do a prawn spinner. Spinners, you can move a lot slower and they'll spin, whereas that super bait, you do have to get the boat moving just a little bit more. And I can tell some of the guys that I was fishing alongside in their power boats, I know they were all using prawn spinners and they weren't too happy with me. trying to pass them up with the little super bait. But I figured, you know, at the end of the day, I had to give it a try. I hadn't seen much else happening, so I had to give it a shot.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, and that's a good point you just made as well, is switching it up. If it's not working, don't, you know what I mean? Switch it up. There's a lot of different techniques and scents and options that we can, you know, use to just alter it even a little bit. And sometimes that's all it takes. Even with the technique that I love is with the prawn spinners and where I'm finding the biggest success with me and my kayak, and I use the Hobie kayak. I'm using the Outback. I got the turbo fins on it, big sailing rudder, so I can really move through the water. I can cut, I can turn, I can pivot, I can hold my position. And that's what I like about it, is I can sit there and I can hover, and I have a fish finder on it with the sonar. You know, I have the sonar with the bells and whistles, so I can see what's going on. But I can hold my position, I can move around, I can see what's going on, I can see what the contour of the ground or the shelf underneath me is doing. I slowly move forward and I'll tap bottom on those shelves. I don't use the divers. On the technique I use, I fish in the 18 to 20 feet of water, and I'm, for the most part, my line's dropping back into the water at about a 45-degree angle, and I'm using cannonball leads, and I'm about every 5 seconds, I want to be tapping the bottom. That's what these Chinook are holding on these shelves here locally. They're coming up. I don't know if they're coming up, getting out of the current, or if they're cutting the corners, but, you know, along this river, there's a lot of these blown out, kind of these deposits of silt or sand and rocks and stuff like that that become these shelves over time. Or some of them are natural volcanic, you know, plateaus and little mini shelves in the water. But these fish like to jump up on them and hold there. And so using this technique where I'm actually tapping bottom with that spinner, but that's the biggest thing I've learned, too, about this technique. And like I said, I'm no master, but in the last 3 years, especially in the last year or 2 years, I feel like I've kind of dialed it in a little bit. And I think part of it is that spinner has, or that prawn has to be spinning. It can't just sit there and flutter. It's got to have literally the same action that your herring has, where it's kind of rolling in the water.
Okay.
It'll do you no good if it does nothing else. It's got to sit. So how you attach it is key. Again, kudos to the old guys in the power boats that taught me that.
Yeah, that definitely gives me something to think about, because I know mine definitely don't spin quite as much as you might like. They kind of wobble a little bit. Every once in a while they might do a complete rotation, but might have to think about that just a little bit harder to make sure they get a spin on them.
Like you said, there's that on northwestkayakangler.com, they asked if I would do the little tutorial on how to attach those prawns to the by the way, we're using a double hook rig. I'm using 25 pound mono with a 3-aught hook at the bottom, so a very large hook at the bottom of the rig. That's what hangs the lowest. About 4 inches above that, I'm putting a size one, and that's what I'm putting through the tail. The 3-aught, the big hook that hangs at the bottom, that actually goes through the head of the prawn and hangs the furthest back as it spins in the water. That's the furthest. That's the point that they come up and grab it and bite. So that's why you're putting that big hook at the very back, because that's what you're hoping to plant into their jaw, is that number or that 3-aught. But on the website, I did that little tutorial that kind of explains how you would do it.
Yep, I'm linking that up into the chat room right now. That way everyone can get a good visual idea and get to see that tutorial. Because you had some good stuff on there.
Thank you.
So we kind of jumped right into all the fishing talk. Let's back up just a little bit. tell us more a little about you. Like, I know we went over some of the tournament happenings last year, but tell us more about your little fishing career you got going on here.
You mean the past or the current?
Past, current, future, whatever.
Well, I grew up between Southern California and Salt Lake City and Park City, Utah. So I had a taste of the ocean as a kid, and then when I moved to Utah, I had a good taste of the Rocky Mountains and fly fishing and just angling. From a technical aspect, I guess, as a fly fisherman at a young age, and learning to tie my own flies and doing all that, that's where it all began for me. And then I got into Hobie kayaks actually when I was living in Utah, and it was because I'd used them in Southern California, and my father had used them. But anyway, so I had a little bit of experience in Utah. I got my first one right before I moved to Portland, but I was living in Utah at the time. And I realized just that the compared to what I was using before, like the float tube was my first thing. And then I got a pontoon boat, you know, because I was fishing some of these, you know, rolling down rivers and in the Wasatch Mountains and fishing lakes in the Wasatch Mountains. That's all you had at that point. And had I had a kayak at that point earlier on, it would have been amazing. But anyway, long short, so it was kind of a fly fishing beginning. Then I got into the kayak fishing. I kind of attached the two of them. Came to Portland 8 years ago and brought my kayak with me. I still have it. It's a 2002 Hobie Outback. still great. Still use it. It's my backup kayak when I got somebody in town or somebody, a friend or anybody that wants to go out and check it out. But so that's kind of where it all began. I got here in Portland, found all this water. I mean, we have the salt, you know, and an hour and, you know, 20 minutes to the west of us. We have all these rivers that run through our you know, right through huge rivers that run all around us with big runs and lots of big bass and walleye and sturgeon, you name it. I mean, I feel very fortunate to live here and putting the kayak into this area from a fishing standpoint is powerful. I mean, there's a lot of water we have to choose from, and a lot of big fish. So you know, I kind of put two and two together and picked it up. And I think we all did about the same time, because I know that, you know, like yourself here, and you're a very popular person. A lot of people know who you are, you've been a big part of the movement of kayak fishing in the Northwest, but it's really exploding up here. Like, I've heard that we're a little bit behind, but I think that our amount of interest is going to quadruple very quickly here because of all the water we have. So, and that's happening now.
Oh yeah, you know, almost every time I'm out on the water, I see another kayak that I haven't seen before.
Yep.
You know, and they're, you know, you roll up on them and they're like, oh, you're so-and-so. I've seen you on the forums. And I'm like, who are you? I haven't seen you. You know, let me introduce myself. Who are you on the forums? That type of thing. So, yeah, I've seen that also. So.
Yeah, it's really growing. Yeah. Our forum a year ago right now was maybe 800 people or less. Maybe 750, and right now I think we're close to 950. So, I mean, just in a year to have that kind of growth, I think is incredible, and I think that's going to continue to multiply.
That it will. Now you're also, well, if I know you didn't mention it, but if anyone was listening, they might have picked up on the fact that you're a Hobie kayak pro, our local guy, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes, I am.
You also are on the Next Adventure kayak team, correct?
I am, yes. I'm also sponsored by Next Adventure, which is a very large but local, locally owned sporting good store. They have actually more than one location now. They have their flagship store, which is on Southeast Grand in downtown Portland. And then they just opened a year and a half ago the Next Adventure Paddle Center, which is a huge, I think they carry 280 different brands of whitewater, touring, ocean, fishing, kayaks, I mean, you name it, they have it all. So it's, you know, like I said, with all the water we have here, kayaking is very, very popular. But their biggest moving kayak now is now things have switched from the ocean kayak of the last, what, 8-10 years. I guess that became kind of a fad, is getting out and paddling with orcas, or, you know, you see the videos.
No, the sea kayaks.
That's now, yeah, exactly. Now a lot of the energy is really going towards fishing kayaks, and I know that because, you know, I being part of the fishing team and helping them promote kayaking and kayak fishing, I get to see the numbers, and it's exploding. Like, the amount of kayaks and they don't just sell Hobies, but even the Hobies alone, I mean, they're one of the biggest sellers of kayaks. Even in the downed economy over the last couple of years, they were one of the biggest positive growth territories in the nation was the Northwest over the last couple of years. And I think a lot of that is, you know, people like you and, you know, that are online, you're very visible, you're out in the field, you're catching a ton of fish, people see who you are, they see what you're doing from a kayak. All these people, and there's people that see me and all the other guys from our online community, and these guys with gas prices and these guys that are licensing boats and they're waiting in line to drop their boats in the water, and this is the time of year that these local boat ramps, you got to be there by 6 in the morning. You got to be there at the crack of dawn,
you
got to
be there at 4 in the morning
trailer.
And get in line.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas as we're able to, I can go right down the street from my house. There's boat ramps all around, but I have no issues. I go right down the street from my house. There's a trail that I pull my, you know, I throw my wheels in the bottom of my Hobie. I load it all up in my truck. It's like 200 feet, literally, down this little dirt trail. And throw it right in the water, turn my fish finder on, pull my wheels out, throw them in the back, and I'm off. And, you know, and I'm it's right around the corner to my favorite shelf. So, yeah, we have we're fortunate. We're the smart ones, I think, at this point. I mean, I'm not saying power boaters aren't smart, but I think that, you know, it's so much easier to do it the way we're doing it. And
definitely cheaper.
We're catching just as many fish as everyone else.
That we are. At least you are. I know you're catching as much fish as everyone else. I'm still having troubles with that. But I'll get there. I'm looking at your rigging here. Because, see, you've caught more salmon in the last 2 weeks than I've caught in the last 3 years. I'm still trying to figure that whole thing out. you know, every salmon I have caught has been native. So I haven't been able to bring anything home. So someday I'll get it all figured out. I'm looking over your setup here on Northwest Kayak Anglers, and I see you run a longer dropper than I do and a shorter leader. So I might make some of those adjustments myself. What are you looking forward to for the rest of the year?
We're just scratching the surface. I really think the season, for me at least, starts with the spring Chinook run that we have here in Portland. It's by far the grand slam kickoff of the year, is, you know, to me at least. We're gonna go right into halibut season. What I think just opened here. Now what we're looking for are flat ocean days. You know. Still a lot of energy out in the ocean, being as close to Alaska and whatnot that we are. But when the ocean lays down this time of year, especially as we further into summer, it's going to get flatter and flatter and get really nice for the next few months. But as you know, we've got a lot of rock fishing, a lot of halibut coming up. All the intercoastal species are going to be, I think, a big focus for us. I personally target a lot of steelhead. There's going to be a lot of summer steelhead rolling. Actually, they're already coming into our water now here locally in Portland. There's a lot of that energy. There's a huge summer steelhead run here in Portland. So there'll be a lot of side drifting and bobber and jig fishing that we'll do on the Clackamas River here over the summer.
And we know you're all pro
crabbing.
At that one.
Yeah. And then crabbing. That's my other thing that I don't know if you know that about me, but in the later, you know, come July, there's so many estuaries that we have here along the Oregon coast and you know, waterways and coves and bays and whatnot that there's tons of Dungeness crab here, and so that's the other thing I look forward to is dropping a few of the crab rings, catching some good tasting Dungeness
crab.
Yeah,
you and I have two very different methods when it comes to crabbing. I like to use the crab pots. I like to drop them and go away.
Yeah.
That way gives me time to go fishing, whereas you like the crab rings, so you're constantly playing with the crab rings. Drop
yeah, that's a good
one.
Point. I mean, well, so. Here's the thing. It's like if I'm gonna go crabbing, and that's gonna be my primary reason for being there, I like to drop crab rings because they lay flat on the floor of the ocean or the bay or whatever that I'm in. So, and I'll stink that thing up with everything from turkey legs to old salmon, that, like right now with all the salmon I'm catching right now for my kayak with the spring Chinook run, I'm saving all my salmon bellies and freezing them because this summer that's all stinky, oily crab bait for me. I'm going to throw that in a little net and I'm going to put that in my crab rings. But the crabs, they just hammer those things, especially if they don't have to figure out how to get in, like a crab pot.
That's a good argument.
Well, that's why I like the crab rings. If I'm, and here in Oregon, you can have three devices per person for crabbing. So, okay, so that's three per pots or rings per person. So out on the kayak, when I drop those three crab rings, you know, it doesn't take long to go from one buoy to the next to pull them up. So it's good having the rings because, for one thing, crabs don't have to figure out how to get inside of the thing. They don't have to find the gate. They crawl right on. They find that food. If I have to happen to come by right above at that moment, and I slowly pull my slack out until I know I'm straight over and I'll just yank that thing, I'm only in 15 feet of water, but I'll get them right up to the surface immediately. They don't have time to crawl out. I'll dump them right in the cockpit of my Hobie, Mirage drives there and all. I'll just throw them right in there. They can't crawl out because they can't crawl out on the plastic.
Yeah.
And then I'll sort them from there.
Awesome. I
got to keep my legs up out of the way, though, because sometimes they try to pinch my legs.
Actually, they try to
all the time.
They will. They will do that. And don't ask me how I know that. I have been there before. 15 feet of water. Are you doing that out in Lincoln City in Siletz Bay?
Exactly right. Yep.
Okay. That's the only place I know of where you're going to be crabbing in 15 feet of water.
Yeah. Well, and it's perfect because you got to time it right. I mean, there's a launch right there. There's a park right there. So you can literally park and launch within 50 feet of the water. And so it's super easy to get your equipment. You know, with crabbing, there's a lot of equipment you got to bring down, all the rings, a little bit of bait, and all your crabbing, you know, or your kayak and stuff. So it makes it really easy to launch. And there's, like I said, there's sand and beach all over the place. I have kids, so I can bring my
family
down there.
Keep them entertained.
Yeah, and I'll come in, too. I mean, I'll go drop the rings, and I'll come in and spend, you know, 30 minutes at a time and throw my kayak up on the beach and hang out on the beach with my kids and just every so often go out and check the rings. Or pots, whatever you want to do. Pots are good, too, because you know, like with
well, see, I like them because I can drop them and go fishing.
Yeah.
And that's
exactly.
The thing. You know, you can leave them sit for, you know, 12, 14 hours, you know, overnight in the state of Oregon if you want to. Not a problem. you know.
Yeah.
And that's, it does mean you're taking more stuff out with you, because now you're taking all your fishing gear and three crab pots and bait for those crab pots.
Yeah.
So that makes things a little bit more cumbersome, but, you know, once they're in the water, you don't have that weight to worry about, all that extra gear to worry about, until you come back in. So,
right.
You know, there's a positive and a negative there. And, you know, I can tell you, surf landing with crab pots is something to be experienced if you haven't already. It definitely changes the game quite a bit. And I think I did that on my second ever surf launch. I had the crab pots with me. So it all worked, though. Hey.
Yeah. So. Well, the secret with that is you don't – you never want to have your line and buoy all coiled up inside of the ring or inside of the pot, because if and when you were for some reason to get knocked over, at least your buoy's out. Like, I've made that mistake. I got flipped over backwards when I very first started trying to kayak crab, and I was using a buddy's crabbing ring, like the big old school rings, and hauling the thing up on the side of my kayak. But this one time I was trying to surf launch, and I had that thing up on the bow of my kayak, and I was paddling out. Sure enough, a big old wave came, but I had the rope all coiled up still inside of the crab pot. So when I dumped it, it all sunk, and there was no way to retrieve it.
It's all gone. Yep.
That's my one bit of advice, is have your rope and your buoy out in case you're, for some reason, dump the thing off the side. At least you can retrieve it.
Yep. See, I set things up a little bit differently using the folding crab pots. I leave them folded up and keep the ropes and buoys separate until I'm on the spot where I'm going to start dropping them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just fold them, make them all big, stuff them full of bait, clip the line on, and drop them down then. The important thing is that after or before, the important thing, before you throw the crab pot off the boat, make sure the line's attached. There was once that I did bait up a pot, kicked it off, and said, hey, how come the rope's not going anywhere?
Oh,
so,
shoot.
Yeah, that was with the that little folding Promar pot that I won third place at the crab tourney last year.
I know those Promars are great.
It was
I got one of those too, and they are good. They're great. They're great for the kayak. You're right, because you can stack those. You can take more than one. That was my one complaint with when I was messing around trying to haul out my buddy's big crab pots, is I could only carry one at a time. I'd have to haul it out, come back, and in the meantime, seagulls were picking through all my bait that I had all. You know what I mean? It was just like one problem after another.
Yep.
And so those Promar collapsible traps are pretty sweet, actually. They're really cool.
You know, right after the crab tourney last year, I went to the Puget Sound for a weekend, and that's when I really put that pot to use and loved it. I had it in about 130 feet of water, and it was bringing in some monster dungies. So it worked great. I loved it. And then I left it in Tillamook Bay. So there's a little rush.
Here's the thing. I mean, there's so many things that we have here, whether it be crabs, whether it be all the rock fishing we're going to be able to get into here. My focus right now is springers, because I think pound for pound and flavor and
– it's the number one eating fish.
That's what my energy is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right down the street from my house, too. So it's like I'm crazy not to. And I'm averaging about, I'd say, almost a fish every time I've gone, which is pretty good. It's pretty damn good, especially when they're averaging anywhere between – well, my first one this year was 26 inches, and I think it was like 8 pounds. And then my second – it's funny because it slowly progressed up. To last night, my biggest, 39 and a quarter. But But it's as it's gone up, it's gone from 8 pounds to last night, 22.5 pounds. So there's a lot of big and little. And, I mean, you know, some are two-year-old fish, some are three-year-old. They're saying a lot of four, but they're saying the biggest part of such big numbers this year is the amount of five-year-old fish that we're getting back in our systems.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I think last night that must have been a five-year-old fish, that big 29, 20. Because on the Springer scale, that's a big Springer. I think
at 29 you're talking – I think
39 and a quarter. Yeah, 39.
That's a 5 year. That's definitely a 5 year old fish.
Yeah, 39 and a quarter and 22.5 pounds is what it was.
Yeah, that's definitely a 5 year old fish.
And really crummy. Like
you haven't got out on
super crummy. You can tell they're right out of the ocean.
That's awesome. So you haven't been on the salt at all this year, have you?
No, I have. I've been out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went out. I did my first trip out of Pacific City this year. I did my first surf launch out of Pacific City, which was very interesting. There was a group of us that went out a month or two ago. We had a really nice weekend where the ocean just kind of flattened out. And online, amongst our board at northwestkayakangler.com, there was, of course, that's where we exchange, you know, invitations to do, you know, get-togethers and do big, you know, always better to kayak fish with more than one person as far as I'm concerned. And more the merrier, especially when you're rock fishing out in the ocean and the elements that you're close to being next to the rocks and whatnot like that. But, we found a good window of opportunity. There were about five or six of us that went out one day. And, I caught two lings, and I caught, I think it was about four or five rocks and a big cabbie.
Nice.
Big cabazon. Yeah, I had a really good day.
That's
just jigging grubs, doing a lot. One of my favorite is, of course, I don't want to steal all my secrets, but...
Oh, you don't have
earlier,
to.
I'm glad to share, but I like the glow. Put it this way, my favorite color is glow.
I'm right there with you. Yep. If it doesn't glow, it better be white.
Yeah, exactly. So, and even when I use those glows, I like to, you know, leave my glows on the deck. If I'm about to throw a new one on, I'll put it out on the deck to sit in the sun for a second, because by the time that gets down to the 25 or 35 feet of water, I mean, still pretty clear down there, but that thing is glowing. It's nuclear down there to those fish, and they'll hammer it. They like that stuff.
Yep, that it is. We do share that in common.
Yes, we do.
That's
man, you've got some
favorites.
Big fish. I've learned when it comes to salt, like, you're the one I go to. Like, you know a lot about the salt. You know a lot about the rock fishing and some of the bigger species out there. So,
and who won the Oregon Rockfish Classic last year? It was not me.
I did.
That's
I
right.
Did, yeah.
You did.
Yeah, I got it. I got it last year. I won the kayak. It was a great, you know, it was actually, that was a lot of fun. It was a real good opportunity to get to know a lot of the people. That was my first real big outing with everybody. And it was very flattering to be able to come into the tournament, kind of the unknown person. And I had a really good year. I not only did I win with the biggest first place fish, but I went on one.
You would have had second
place twice
because
I had the biggest two fish. Yeah, I had a 12 pound 14 ounce ling and a 12 pound cabazon. So
now,
what
is that ling?
35 entries.
35 inches?
No, 35 entries. There were 35,
oh,
35. Contestants.
Yeah.
So I was very flattered to have not only the first biggest fish, but the second. But I'll tell you again, glow.
Oh, yeah.
Glow.
I agree. I agree. Well, hey, Mike, it's been great having you tonight.
Thank you so much. I had a good time.
Hey, any final comments, any final thoughts before we sign up for the night?
No, I just say, you know, it's kayak angling is about the best way out there that I know of to catch fish. So if you got friends or people you want to hang out with, get them into kayak fishing, because the more the merrier. I'm slowly getting friends into it, and I couldn't be more grateful now that I have people to go kayak fishing with. So have fun out there. Be safe.
Hey, that's awesome. Hey, Michael, thanks a lot for being on. This one's for you. There we go. I hope you have a good night. Thanks for joining me on the first night ever of Kayak Fishing Radio West. And on that note, thanks everyone else for listening in. Time to call it a night. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Please hang up and try again.